William Shakespeare stated in his last will and testament, "First, I commend my soul into the hands of God my Creator, hoping and assuredly believing, through the only merits of Jesus Christ my Savior, to be made partaker of life everlasting, and my body to the earth whereof it is made." Within a month, William Shakespeare was dead. Of Shakespeare's literary life, the English poet Robert Greene said, "He was an upstart crow, beautified without feathers." Because Greene believed that Shakespeare plagiarized the themes and plots of other English poets and writers. But Ben Jonson, the English poet and also a contemporary of Shakespeare, said this of Shakespeare, "Thou art a monument without a tomb." I now ask you to remember these two conflicting views of Sir William Shakespeare. I must now turn my attention and address to the 125th anniversary of this university, now known as the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. The term university literally means a universe, a body, a whole. Any other definition of university merely explains what it does in regards to teaching, learning, and research, or its physical buildings and facilities or location. Thus, the University of Chattanooga, Chattanooga City College, which is now the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, is one universe, one university. How people perceive the universe depends upon what they observe, what they see, and how they interpret what they see in relation to their experiences in their past, their present, and their projections of their futures. So I ask the question, how do the people of Chattanooga perceive this universe? This University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Regardless of our perceived greatness, this University of Tennessee at Chattanooga will progress in direct relation to how people perceive this universe. As an example, Shakespeare was perhaps England's greatest writer, yet two of his peers saw him from different perspectives. The poet and novelist Robert Greene called William Shakespeare an upstart crow, beautified without feathers. The poet and critic Ben Jonson called William Shakespeare a monument without a tomb. So I ask, which was he, an upstart crow or a monument? The answer depends upon one's perspective. Robert Greene saw William Shakespeare as a taker because Shakespeare would use the plots and themes of other poets without their consent. For example, The Winter's Tale by Shakespeare was based upon a novel written by Robert Greene, Pentosta, The Triumph of Tyre. Ben Jonson saw Shakespeare as a giver because as England's most prolific writer, Shakespeare could take those ideas, themes, and plots and weave them into masterpieces. He was a monument without a tomb. A similar dilemma is enshrouded in the 125-year history of this universe, the University of Chattanooga and its heir, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Black Chattanoogans for years saw this universe as an upstart crow, beautified without feathers. Yes, ex-slaves helped build this universe. The children of ex-slaves swept its halls, cooked its food, cut its grass, and cleaned its classrooms. Yet it took 83 years before this universe admitted its first black student. Between 1886 and the summer of 1963, no one in the black community, a major part of the Chattanooga universe, saw any beacon of light on the hill. My family moved to Chattanooga from Georgia when I was 9 years old. I did not see that light until I was 32 years old, when in the summer of 1963, I became the first black student ever admitted into the shipwreck and destitute. Yes, this universe was a crow. Beautified, but still a crow. An upstart crow at that. The black community lost generations that might have been salvaged. How many more black students could this universe have served between 1886 and 1963? We have lost generations of families, and we still have huge generation gaps. No one knows precisely how many we've lost. No one knows, and that is the truth. The universe began to change. In the spring of 1963, my good friend, and some of you out there knew him, Dr. Major Jones, a local black Methodist minister who was a classmate of Dr. Martin Luther King, as also was my own brother James. He said to me, "President Trill, why don't you just go up to the University of Chattanooga and just enroll and get your master's degree?" It sounded so simple. So I went up to the University of Chattanooga in the spring of 1963 at night and got in the line to register for the graduate evening classes. All of a sudden, the whole place got quiet, eerie quiet. But I stood my ground and stayed in the registration line. Then I got quiet. I began to realize that no one knew what I was doing. I had not made any backup plans. No one knew that I was actually doing this, not my good friend, Dr. Major Jones, not even my wife. I stood there. I didn't know what to do. But in life, I have learned that when you know you are doing the right thing, stand your ground. Then the registrar, whom I knew, came over, put his arms around my shoulder and said to me, "Now, President Trevor, you know that we do not admit black students." I said, "Yes, I know that. And that's why I'm here, to change that." My friend said, "Let's have a little chat and discuss it." So we discussed it, and I went home. The next day, I received a call from another friend, one who served with me and with James Madden on the 10-member Mayor's Biracial Committee, Mr. W. E. Brock, Jr., Chairman of the Board of the University of Chattanooga, who said to me, "I was told that you tried to enroll in the graduate school." After a long pause, it was a brief pause, but you know, in this situation, it sounded like eternity. He said to me, "When are you going back?" I did go back. Shortly after our conversation, the UC Board of Trustees announced the opening of the graduate school at the University of Chattanooga for all students. I did go back that summer of 1963 and enrolled as the first black student. The upstart crow began to shed its feathers and reveal its true emerging self. I was witnessing the birth of a monument. The universe known as the University of Chattanooga began the process of giving to all the inhabitants of this universe. That was history in the making, and that is the truth. The next epic milestone in this university's history occurred in 1969. In fact, there were two milestones. I coordinated the merger of Chattanooga City College into the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Briefly, I will tell the story of how it happened. I fought hard to effect that merger. I used the prestige of my office as president of Chattanooga City College, my extensive relationships with the influential and affluent power people in Chattanooga, organizations and the general population to solidify support for the merger. I wanted the merger to occur at one and the same time. The merger of the University of Chattanooga and Chattanooga City College to become the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. It was important to me, very important to me, that these two institutions be merged on the same day, at the same time, with a singleness of purpose, like a marriage, in order that the merger would produce a singleness of purpose, unity. But the merger didn't occur that way, and I almost panicked. I did not want the merger of Chattanooga City College to be pushed up a year, as some proposed. I did not want the UC students and the UC faculty to be put into a position the following year thinking that they would have to move over and make room for the black students and faculty of Chattanooga City College. I fought with teeth and toenails for that not to happen. I did not want the newly created University of Tennessee at Chattanooga to revert to or regress toward its old ways of exclusivity. The challenge, that demon of regression, I fought like an evangelist. I was everywhere during those crucial 58 days between July 1, 1969 and August 27, 1969. I was everywhere, all over the place, almost everywhere at once, pleading that the merger should be consummated at once and not be pushed down the road or sometime next year, if ever. I was everywhere making speeches before the Baptist Ministers Union, before the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance, before the Pan-Hellenic Council, before the Interracial Human Relations Council held in the auditorium of the Interstate Life and Accident Insurance Building on McCauley, before the Education Committee, the Chamber of Commerce, before the major city clubs, and before any group that would hear me. Clarence Robinson kept encouraging me by saying, "All right, Traylor, show your face." He made appointments after appointments for me with civic and social groups, for me to make the case. Ray Evans, Vice President of Chattanooga Chemical Company, who was Vice Chair of the Chattanooga City College Board, said to me, "Don't let them exclude Chattanooga City College from this merger. Make it happen." I remember a University of Chattanooga economics professor saying to me, always encouraging, "Go get them, Tiger!" During that fateful summer of 1969, the UC administration introduced three obstacles which could have derailed the merger. Debt, students, and state funding. Chattanooga City College is in debt. This was a charge level in a joint meeting with UC and UTC officials by the UC administration. That was news to me. I asked, "Who do we owe?" They said, "IBM for 50 Selectric typewriters and other major equipment." I responded, "The IBM account is over a period of time and the account is up to date." I was flabbergasted and amazed that such a charge would be brought up to threaten the merger. Then I said, speaking slowly and with clarity, "If that is all that is holding up this merger, I will simply sell the equipment." Dr. Joseph Johnson, who was in that meeting, said, "Horace is serious. He will sell them. But there is no need for that. The university will buy the equipment for UTC." I want to be clear on this matter, the issue of debt. Chattanooga City College was given to this merger debt-free. The main campus located in historic Fort Hood, together with an apartment building and an additional building, both located on Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard, the former home of Zion College, its predecessor. All property was given debt-free. The second obstacle was that Chattanooga City College had a costly compensatory education program for 50 at-risk first-generation college students that the university could not afford. At the time, neither UTC nor UTK was eligible for the federal funds to support the program. My response to that obstacle was swift and decisive. I realized that no help was being offered for these students, and this issue could derail the merger. I told the group that I would go to Washington and ask my friends at the Department of Education to help resolve this problem. Also, I went to Atlanta to secure the assistance of the Education Improvement Project of the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. They supported the arrangement that I proposed, namely that the federal funds that the university was not eligible to get would be added to a similar program funded under Title III of the Higher Education Act, located at Knoxville College, with the stipulation that Knoxville College would subcontract the project to the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and with the proviso that it be implemented by the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, without any indirect costs being added to the project. Those complex arrangements were finalized in time for the compensatory education project to continue at UTC without interruption for the fall term of 1969. We owed a debt of gratitude, which we offered to Knoxville College and its board of trustees. That part of the history no one ever knew. Now at last, I thought the merger would proceed, but that was not to be. The third obstacle was forthcoming. The UC administration pointed out that before the merger could proceed, the university needed an additional $300,000 to complete the merger. Now, in today's money, that's well over $1 million. I was at my wit's end. Any logic would have suggested that these obstacles should have been worked on together, not one at a time. John Longwith tells half the story, almost fictional, in his book, Light Upon a Hill, The University of Chattanooga, 1886 to 1996. I was not interviewed for that book, nor was I consulted. This is what happened. This account should have been in that book. As I pondered what to do, I remembered that Chuck Bender, the mayor of the city of Chattanooga, was a close friend of Governor Buford Ellington. I called my friend Major Chuck Bender. I said, Chuck, and I told him the status of the merger. Chuck, who followed Mayor Ralph Kelly, had just reappointed me as president of Chattanooga Progress Incorporated. We had worked well together for the progress of Chattanooga, so we were close friends. I told the mayor that I was at my wit's end and explained how the obstacles were blocking the merger. Chuck Bender told me that he would call the governor and that he would call me back. Chuck called me back within 30 minutes and told me that the governor was concerned that the merger was being held up, and that he would call a meeting in his office in Nashville the following week with everybody being present, including UTK, UC, Chattanooga City College, Tennessee Higher Education Commission, members from all of these boards, from Andy Hope's staff, Ed Boland, and Joe Johnson was there as the Speaker of the House and a representative of the Senate. We met at the governor's office. But getting back to the speech, or the conversation between Chunk Bender and the governor, Chunk told me this, that the governor wanted me to write a brief proposal stating what I needed to finish this merger. Then Chunk said to me, write well, because after that meeting, what you are asking for will become law. As I sat at my desk in my office at Chapman City College and pondered what was about to happen, I felt a sigh of relief. But then I thought, they may come up with something else. Then I knew that there was one additional important thing that I could, an important meeting that I could call. I invited 24 people to a luncheon held in the conference room at Chattanooga City College the week before we were all to meet with the governor. Dr. Joe Johnson and Dr. Ed Boland were in that meeting, and both of them said to me at a meeting afterwards, said, if you had asked our opinion, we would probably say you shouldn't have called us. But the meeting was effective. I secured a renewed commitment from a leading group of Chattanoogans who spoke with one voice, urging the completion of the merger. Among the leaders who attended that meeting was my good friend, John T. Lupton, Ray Evans, Dr. Claude Bond, Clarence Robinson, and the executive director of the Denwood Foundation. Then came we all to Nashville to meet with the governor for the purpose of finalizing the merger agreement in the governor's office. That's how the merger happened, and that is the truth. Let me be perfectly clear. John Longwith was wrong when he wrote in his book, Life on a Hill, and I quote him, on August 27, 1969, Chattanooga City College was acquired by UT and absorbed into UTC, end quote. He makes it sound like we were swallowed up by a whale. Let me be perfectly clear. Chattanooga City College was not acquired, nor did we sell Chattanooga City College. The Board of Trustees gave Chattanooga City College to this merger debt-free and without any conditions, believing that we would become part of a new universe, not the University of Chattanooga, of the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, a monument, and that is the truth. After the merger, the Chattanooga administration offered me a position as special assistant to the chancellor. My immediate thought was, they are at it again. They should have offered me a position of vice chancellor, and James Mapp, sitting in this audience, wrote the chancellor a letter. James doesn't know this, but I still have a copy. There were four vice chancellorships. I was given this special. At the time, I accepted it. I got a call from the chairman of my board and also from Ray Evans. But let me tell you how I felt. I did not want my employment to become an issue because I'm a sociologist also, and I'm also a psychologist. It's easier for people to grab anything as a scapegoat. The only reason that bankrupt Chattanooga City College wanted to be part of the merger because he wants a job. I accept it. And as I pointed out, maybe this thing is real, it's special. Well, was I wrong? The next thing the administration did is hired an executive assistant. Then I'm wondering, what is this special guy supposed to do? I was given an office over the chancellor's office. I was on the top floor in the administration building over the chancellor's office. But nobody knew what this special assistant was supposed to do, not even me. The ill-defined job wasted 2 years of my professional life. In 1971, I left this university. But that is another story. Chattanooga City College believed in this merger and gave all that it had to help create this universe, this monument. Chattanooga City College should be remembered. I would suggest historical markers for three locations: the home and campus of its predecessor, Zion College, which was 1,000 East 9th Street, which is now Martin Luther King Boulevard, the old Park Place School. The Chattanooga City College campus location. I would say this to you, in May I came back to Chattanooga after being absent for a number of years. When I looked at the site of Chattanooga City College stood, my heart fell. It's now a parking lot, as if we've been wiped off the face of the earth. And the third is the home of the president, 508 Fort Wood Place. That 16-room mansion was a meeting place where students, I held things like the Scholar's Supper. DeSales Harrison was one of those speakers. He's been in that house. When the merger was in the process of being occurring, the Southern Association sent a representative. He slept at that house. Before I left Chattanooga, I put that house in the Federal Register because I didn't want the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga to tear it down as it was moving and expanding. So I believe that the university should expand, but also believe that you should preserve its history. The next thing that I strongly would urge is that a Skiff City, Chattanooga City College Scholarship Fund for minority first-generation college students should be developed and put in the UC-UTC Foundation. And lastly, either the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga or some local foundation will underwrite an appropriate historian to tell the 20-year history Zion Chattanooga City College. It should be positive in the Lupton Library, and I'll tell you why. Jack Lupton's relationship with Chattanooga Zion and Chattanooga City College was long lasting. In 1950, if I think I would sit down. Well, let me just say this, 2 minutes, now I'm going to sit down. In 1954, Christmas, Zion College was broke. Following the May 17, 1954 decision of the Supreme Court, Temple College and the University and the Highland Park Baptist Church just simply left. It was Jack Lupton. I appealed because I was the highest ranking person on the staff left. I was dean at the time. Jack Lupton provided the funding that really saved Zion College in 1954. In 1960, when I did the study of the educational needs of black students in Chattanooga area, because I call this place an educational desert, Jack Lupton was one of the supporters, and he was on that committee that effected that. When we made an appeal to the Benwood Foundation to purchase a property for us on Fort Wood, Jack Lupton walked with me from his office there in the volunteer building to the American National Bank to meet with Scott Probasco Sr., who was a member of the Glenwood Foundation Board. And never forget, Jack said to me as we were walking, you know, they may say, if you're so interested in Zion College, getting this private ordinance, but I'd give it to them. That made me think of something else. I said, Jack, do you want to go into the Guinness Book of World Records? He said, how, Horace? I said, by creating the world's first instant black millionaire. He said, how do you do that? I said, give me $1 million and I'll work out the paperwork. In conclusion, to all of us here who love this university, who believe in what it does, who care for this university, may the God of William Shakespeare bless you and cause you to prosper, and you in turn cause this institution to prosper. May the God of William Shakespeare bless the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga.